iHeart Podcast.
Hello. It must be We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
Oh, here we are. How did we get here at We Knows Parenting?
I blacked out until this moment, and here we are. Maybe we were drugged and kidnapped.
I don't know. All I know is that I'm a happily married wife and mother of two children.
Everything's perfect. No problems. We've definitely been drugged. Who knows? We record in the dark. We could be somewhere else.
We could be.
Actually, we're not because...
What are you trying to say?
I don't know. I've lost my mind. How are you?
I'm great.
Cool.
Oh, okay.
You just went to the gym before recording this.
I did. I really needed to because, as you know, I have a constant stress rash that forms on my eyelids as like a beacon of when I'm not taking care of myself.
Uh-huh.
And I could feel it today creeping back up at work after like a few days of calming it down.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I have to go record a podcast with my husband. I got to go do something for me while he's putting the kids to bed so that I can chill out and not be cranky on the pod.
Well, you sound delightful.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
We're going to keep it that way. I'm feeling good. Sleepy. I've got some whiskey and some coffee.
Sleepy is just a given with this podcast, and that's what listeners have to accept and understand.
Okay.
At all
that's
times.
What they're here for, Beth.
That's they're what here they're to here hear for the, drowsy, tired,
the drowsy
tired arguments at the end of a long day.
The drowsy musings of two very stressed adults. Well, it was a pretty good week. The big thing for me is we've applied Bryn to the Dos Caminos.
Did we apply?
We did.
You filled out the form?
Yeah, I hope that's okay.
No, it's good. I just had no idea if we're going to make the deadline.
We did. I did it
great.
While I was there.
Okay, great.
I filled it out before I went and then turned it in and right, it was over.
Okay, so you went and to do the school visit, which I ended up not being able to go to.
You had a big meeting?
Hollywood meeting.
Hollywood's like, is Beth there? We got to meet. When's
now,
the most important
today.
Thing happening this week? That's when we're meeting.
We need her here. So I had big wheelings and dealings going on left and right. And so I said, hey, Peter, my house husband.
Yes,
can you
my
deal,
work wife.
Can you deal with our familial obligations?
Sure. Well, work wife is a different thing, isn't it? You're my working wife.
Yeah, you could say I'm your working woman.
You're my regular working woman. I went there. First of all, a really strange thing happened when I got there. This is not parenting related at all. A little bit. I parked, and I don't like to stand around with strangers because I'm afraid of everyone. If you come to our live show on April 23rd, please come talk to me afterwards. And if I'm nervous, it's because I'm afraid of you.
Okay, so you went to do a school visit.
Yeah.
At Dos Caminos, the Spanish language immersion.
The dual language.
Dual language program.
So I parked outside and I was waiting for it to be close to the time before I went in. And a car pulls up next to me and I look over and this guy looks at me and he gives me a face like, huh? In my mind, I read it as, oh, are you leaving? Can I take your parking spot?
And but that's so not what was happening at all.
No. I shook my head and I was like, no. And then he looked at me again, like with bright eyes. And I was like, and then I pointed down, like, I'm staying here. And then he gave me a nervous look and he drove away. I was like, that was weird. And then I went in and then he came in and he's like, Peter, I produced this commercial that you were in 3 years ago. And I was like, oh, cool. And his kid is applying to the same program. But all week, I can't stop thinking about it, which was, how do you drive by somebody who's parked sitting in their car and see them so quickly? Like, that's that guy that I haven't seen in 3 years.
Well, the thing is, because you once had them in a commercial you were involved in, and they have an enormous recognizable head.
Who's they? Oh, me. Who's this giant-headed person you're talking about?
Who could I possibly be describing?
Anyway, very nice guy. And I hope our kids go to school together. So we sat in on a bunch of classes. And this program is really I'm really sold on it. Kids in every class, so it's K through fifth, and in every class, half of the kids are from Spanish-speaking homes as a first language, and the other half are English as a first language. And so the idea is every other day is in Spanish and every other day is in English. And on those days, there's enough dominant speaking kids to sort of model the style that other kids sort of learn from being surrounded by it. So I sat in for like a few minutes on a kindergarten class, a first grade class, up through fifth grade. And they really, you can really see these kindergartners like doing their morning phonics, and the English speaking kids doing Spanish are struggling and they have to think through it. And then as you go up, you can see by fifth grade, there's all these fifth graders doing this research project, and it was sort of in English and in Spanish. And all of these kids were just speaking totally fluent Spanish, just doing their regular work. And it didn't matter what language it was anymore. And I was like, this is great.
What do you mean it didn't matter what language?
They were doing the project and they can research in English or they can research in Spanish.
Okay.
It sort of was irrelevant at that point what the language was, because you're not focused on a language, you're focused on a research project or you're focused on math. And it was truly fluent at that point, at least from the kids I saw.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
That's cool.
So we applied.
We'll see if our kid gets in and we'll see if we continue to live in this town.
Beth really has her sights set on LA, and while I am more anxious about it, I'm trying to point positivity at the idea and not be a crank. How am I doing?
That was the most optimistic I've ever heard you towards it. So yeah, I feel pretty good about that direction that we're heading in.
Good. In this moment, we're doing pretty well. What else had we had? Grandpa, your mom and my dad came to visit on the same day at two different points.
Yeah.
How was that for you?
It was good. I like sort of like the bursts of grandparents, like where someone comes and visits for like a few hours and then leaves, because that's enough time before everyone's just tired and then you just have to like be in each other's space. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's not really a grandparent specific thing as it is, I think, any other person.
Thing. Yeah, I just come from a family where people think that our family gatherings are like everyone needs to be like sitting in the same space all the time staring at each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, what's interesting about your family is they really like to be around each other, but it's not a big game family.
No, it's not a big game family. Well, they've gotten more into games at certain points.
It's true. You're not a big game person, and I've come to accept that.
I like certain games, but I don't like to be gaming nonstop when I'm on like vacation mode. That's the difference.
I like having a task.
I'm like at some point while I'm with these people, I'd love to maybe just have a human conversation and, you know, talk to them, hear what they've been up to.
You and your human standards.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts.
Should we talk about lying?
Yeah. Well, do you want to go put that in the next segment?
No, let's talk about it now.
Okay.
Let's talk about it now. It's pressing.
Okay. Well, what you have to know, listeners, is both of our children are liars.
They're big goddamn liars. And they think that they're getting away with things.
I don't think they do, actually. So Bryn's lying mode is that he introduces incriminating information that he didn't need to give us, such as pulling out a toy that he's just stolen from daycare, or, you know,
or running into the room and saying, "Don't come in here."
Yeah, don't come in the kitchen right now, mommy.
There's nothing you need to see in the fridge.
But it's like he knows he's alerting us. Like, I think a part of him is like, I'm just gonna do this bad thing over here, okay? Like, he's not.
You know what? I relate to the way he lies, because this is how I lie. And I think it is that, like, as soon as he realizes, oh no, this is a bad thing, I don't want people to know, he's already having the conversation in his head. He's already been confronted. He's confronted himself.
You're saying that you and him both lie so impulsively that you're not even comprehending that it's a lie until it's out of your mouth. And then you're sort of just like backtracking, like, yeah, this is fine. I'm just going to keep talking.
Yeah. And then I start defending myself. And that, as I'm defending myself, that's when you learn the whole what had happened. Does it comfort you that I can't possibly keep anything from you?
Yeah. I don't really worry about you, like, doing something majorly wrong because I think your guilt...
Yeah.
You're not... I don't worry about you, like, sneaking around and doing something behind my back on an ongoing process. Maybe for, like, a day.
Yeah. Like, it's probably to see a movie.
Yeah, you do that. But then you inevitably want to brag about the movie, and then the truth comes out.
Yeah, exactly. I can't even hide that.
Yeah. But so that's how Brynn lies. And how Maven lies is she's started doing this thing where she just playfully lies about things. Like, you'd be like, oh, that shirt is red. And she's like, no, it's pink. And then she'll just stick to the lie while smiling at you.
Well, both of our kids, even if they just get something wrong and you try to correct them, they're like, nope, the new reality is the first thing I said without thinking about it.
But now she's starting to enjoy the lie of it and, like, mm-hmm. giggling. And she was doing this thing the other day where she goes, I'm not looking at you. I'm not looking at you. She's, like, looking right at me, obviously. And she's sort of just like, and she goes, what? I'm not looking at you. She's like so playful about it. She's like, Woody, come on, I'm not looking at you.
She sounds like a 13-year-old girl flirting. You're so stupid. I'm not even looking at you.
It's very flirty. She's just like, I'm not looking at you.
So Bryn's big lie was he had a couple toys that he brought home that were clearly not his. They're clearly from daycare.
Yeah, I'm still not sure we got the whole story on that. Because he had like two... He stole three things total.
Put little, you know, cruddy toys in his pocket.
Yeah.
So I was like, are these from daycare? And he's like, this kid who actually, it's his mom's daycare, so he lives there. He's like, yeah. He said I could have it. I was like, oh, okay. So that's fine. I'll just ask him tomorrow if that happened. And Bryn goes, no, don't ask him. And then I was like, oh, well, he said you could have it, right? He goes, yeah. Okay, well. I'll just ask him about it, make sure that that's true. And he's like, no, just don't. And I said, Bryn got so frantic and he's like scrambling. And then it's like 4 minutes of this. And then finally he, light bulb goes off and he goes, you can't ask him because it's a secret. And then he had this like satisfied look on his face and he calmed down. He's like, who dodged a bullet there?
His excuses are so bad. Like, he doesn't know how to like... draw the parallels and lines between his like what he's saying happened, because he's like, no, don't ask. It's just this is what he was doing to me. He was like, the toy isn't from daycare, and I was like, where's it from? He's like, it's from pre-K. I found it on the ground, and
it's,
I was like,
changing wildly.
I don't know whose toy this is.
Well, then I finally say, like, well, should I ask the woman who runs daycare? And he was like, no. And that's like. You know what, Bryn? I'm like, I know you're lying. I know that that's not true. And then at one point, he finally just then goes, Daddy, you're right. I was lying. And then he smiles at himself like, ah, I'm so proud of me for coming clean.
Yeah, he's like, we figured it out. We got to the bottom of it. Oh, now we can move on.
That's it, Daddy. I figured it out. I was lying.
I think all of his takeaways from this are not very educational, but he like... One of the other things he's been doing since this whole discussion about the various stolen toys is that he'll stop me mid-conversation when I tell him something, like I say we're out of a snack or something, and he's like, are you telling me lies? He like does this like playful.
You lying to me?
Are you telling lies right now?
Oh my gosh. Are you as excited as I am that Bryn has started the Bryn Show?
Oh, yeah, the Bryn Show. You can check it out on my Instagram. Hopefully there'll be some more episodes.
I recorded episode 2 tonight. He just holds the phone and turns around and goes, hey, everyone, welcome to my video. Well, I'm eating breakfast.
Really,
this is my sister, Maven.
He's really nailed the presentational manner.
Well, you know what he did tonight? He turned around and he goes, well, welcome. He goes, hello, baby. And I was like... That's me. I've been saying that on the podcast. How does he... I guess I say that to him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, a lot of things he's copying from the Story Pirates podcast.
No, I say it on this podcast.
Oh.
I'm like, yeah, baby!
Maybe you said it on the Story Pirates podcast?
No, I don't. Maybe in real life.
It's definitely been said in real life.
Well, he's stolen my incredibly famous catchphrase, baby.
This next segment is called Do You Knows What They Said? This is where we share some things that our kids said.
Yeah. You know what? I thought it was time to catch up on Bryn's journaling. Gotta say.
Okay. Give us a little bit of the journal.
Just a little thought that I had. I gotta say, predictably, it's been a little tough to keep up on the journal. It's tough to keep a four-year-old up on doing the journal every day. So we do a lot of spurts, but there's some funny ones in here I'd like to share with you, Beth. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
January 25th. How do you feel about sitting at the dinner table? Bryn. Sad because I don't want dinner or snack or breakfast. Maven shakes her head slowly. Intense. Ready for this?
Yes.
What have you done lately that you're proud of? Bryn, with no hesitation. Lights, because I get dead in them. And I say, do you know what proud means? And he says, no.
He said a lot of weird things about blood lately. Like
about blood?
Yeah. Like he'll talk about something like smashing or someone dying. And he's like, and blood come into, like, we watched some of, what's it called? Blue Planet.
Yeah.
And then there's a part where there's like a decaying whale carcass where the sharks are chewing at it. So he's like, there's blood coming out.
He goes, they're eating blood.
Yeah. He's like, the ocean is turning into blood. Like, he's just like very into it.
Does not totally understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Like when he talked about I have an Instagram video of him being like, oh, I go to the bottom and then I'm dead. And then he goes, I hope I don't get a headache when I'm dead. It would be bad to be sick when you're dead. I'm like, I don't think he totally gets it.
No.
January 29th. What jobs look interesting to you? He's princess. I want my name to be Lucas when I grow up. Maven says, a daddy.
She wants her job to be a daddy?
I said, what jobs look interesting to you? And she just said, a daddy.
I love that answer. A daddy.
All right, January 30th. Which book character would you like to meet, Bryn? I just want to be myself in the book. That's existential.
Wow. He's really projecting some things onto the question.
Right. I mean, I was like, oh, he loves the story. Who's his favorite character in the story? Well, him. Because in his mind, he's there in every story.
Because you were asking him like two questions in a row about like what he wanted to be. And he was like, why aren't I enough right now, Dad?
Well, you forced me to do the journal, Dad. You know what? This next question really supports the theory that I've been pushing Bryn into these questions. Because the question is, what do you hope for? And Bryn says, nothing, and I'm never going to ask a question again.
Yeah, at a certain point, he was just resistant to the idea of questions.
Yeah, I think I go until he gets sick of it, and then I stop.
And they always do.
Describe a time you felt bad for someone else. I don't want to do that question. There was more of that. All right, and then I think we took a break, and we came back a few days later. All right, ready?
Okay.
I like it when my family blank together. And Bryn just said, my family works a lot.
He is very fascinated by us going to work because our schedule is somewhat unpredictable to him.
Yeah.
Still. So he sees one of us just be like, all right, I got to go. Bye. And he's like, it's a Saturday night. What's happening? What? Like.
Yeah, it is sort of the same each week, but it's not super. Monday through Wednesday is the most routine he has.
Yeah.
There's 3 days in a row, it's always the same.
He's starting to wrap his head around it because you teach Thursday nights and that's the one night that I definitely pick him up from daycare. So he's started to be like, why do you pick us up on Thursdays? Like he's...
Yeah.
And I keep being like, well, Daddy works on Thursday nights, and then he keeps like just re-asking the question.
Yeah. He's slowly wrapping his head around work. I said, do you know what I do for a living? And he goes, you're a writer.
Yeah, which, well, that's because I told him I was a writer.
Yeah, I explained that too. He should understand what I do. He listens to the Story Parts podcast.
Well, he knows it's just sort of constant noise.
Thanks for that glowing review. All right.
No, I mean, he's just hearing your voice nonstop, no matter what. True. So
actually, this week he got really into the podcast and wanted to hear a lot of episodes. And then he started going each story. He's like, "Is that you?" And he understands that I'm playing different parts, and that's new. What rules at school don't make sense to you? Bryn says, "I don't like being safe."
I feel like that is a response to me trying. I forget. Like, there's something I was probably getting mad at him for, where I kept trying to explain that I'm trying to keep him safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was probably getting really pissed, and I was just like,
"Oh yeah, I understand that." When you think of rules,
yeah, I'm like, "I'm just trying to keep you alive, buddy." Yeah.
I just want you to be safe. Every time he hears us go, "That's not safe," it's something annoying.
Yeah.
To him.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm just trying to climb on the stove, guys. Chill out."
I walked in the kitchen, and he had his whole butt in the washing machine. He goes, "Daddy, look!" And I'm like, "No." I've realized in those moments I have to, if I go, "I'm angry," then he'll want to do it. So instead I have to be like, "Oh boy,
Yeah. That's
really funny. But hey, you know what? Here's a fun fact I'm letting you in on."
Yeah.
"That's really dangerous.
Why don't we just get you out of that pool?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you do this week to keep your body strong and healthy? Bryn, "I ate chips and chocolate."
Nice.
Funny, I have the exact same answer. Too true.
This just got too real.
Oh, shit just got real. Ready for this one? This is my favorite answer.
Okay,
ready? Ready?
Some truth.
Ready? "When were you brave?" Bryn, "Yesterday." That's it. "If you had three wishes, what would they would be?" "If I had three wishes, they would be blank, blank, and blank." Bryn, "I just have two wishes about a scary monster and a stinky, dirty sock snake."
I think those are good wishes.
He's like, "I don't need three. I got two and they're perfect.
I already scared the shit out of all of you. Mission accomplished in two."
And here's a little callback to our previous segment. "When did you feel like lying but told the truth?" Bryn said, "Yesterday, about my friend gave daddy pig to me." This is after he came clean about lying. So I couldn't believe this question was here because we had just gone over it.
Yeah.
Great. All right. And we're wrapping it up. And I spoiled this one already. "Describe what one of your parents does for a job." And Bryn goes, "You work writing." That's not true. Oh, boy. So what did we look? Oh, here's one more. Ready? "Which one of your senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, or tasting, is your favorite? Why?" Bryn's answer? Cats. Did you learn anything about your son from this, my darling wife?
No.
And this has been He Knows What They Said. And now it's time for Did You Knows? This is where we learn about a thing, read about a thing, and then share a thing that we learned about or read about. Beth?
So I wanted to talk about an article from Quartz, which is QZ.com. And the title of the article is "The Reason Childbirth is Over-Medicalized in America Has Its Roots in Racial Segregation." So just for context, I'm not anti-medicine, but there are statistics to back up the fact that we do sort of have a higher level of medical interventions in childbirth in this country than we do in other countries. And this article talks specifically about how in the UK, Scandinavian countries, and France, they have much higher rates of midwives. And they go on later, I believe, to give some statistics about how that can make things safer during childbirth.
Specifically for people at low risk. Obviously, there are people that really do need the medical attention. But
right. And they're not denying that to them, I don't think, in those countries.
Right.
It's just they're not like willy-nilly making everyone have like a midwife at home or whatever, but they're offering that as an option for women who are not having at-risk pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they talk a bit about the history of losing the midwife tradition in our country, which is very heavily rooted in the introduction of, you know, hospitals and medicine and trying to turn hospitals into a profitable business. And basically the medical community waged sort of like a campaign against midwives in order to discredit them so that more women would come to hospitals. And so they sort of did this like stereotypical campaign, like depicting midwives, you know, in racist ways, because many of the midwives in this country had been women of color, or they would characterize them as like witchy, like, you know, women who don't, you know, understand modern science, et cetera. They like, you know, really made them seem like dumb, ignorant, whatever.
Sure.
So hold on here. There's
there's just to jump in though. I found one really interesting detail in there was that sort of in America trying to like prove itself as an established like medical community in comparison to Europe and all. Then like they had a better reputation as medical doctors, and so part of that realizing that a huge number of people coming into the hospital were pregnant women. So just turning that into a profitable endeavor, which you basically already talked about.
I found the statistic I think I was looking for, which is, it just said European countries that lean more heavily on midwives also have better outcomes for babies and their mothers. Maternal mortality rates are a fraction of America's. So, you know, obviously the hospitals in our country do help a lot of women, and there's a lot of situations where like we really value having access to those interventions. But I do think like there's
treating
some real...
it as a medical issue from the get-go.
From the get-go those interventions do not necessarily help a woman and her baby have a healthier outcome. So there's this quote later in the article from this woman who is a midwife, and she works with hospitals, and she faces challenges, however, many of them financial ones. Since she doesn't turn any patients away, she is often left with uncovered costs. Medicaid pays for midwives, but since she doesn't deliver the baby, she loses the bulk of the pregnancy care fee. So this actually happened to us, kind of. So what happens is, with my first labor, we were trying to do a home birth, and we hired these midwives who gave us an incredible amount of their time and attention and care, and just like literally teaching us like what was about to happen, because we live in a country that doesn't teach us that.
Yeah.
And they really coached us on a lot of things about body stuff and prep for the birth and after the birth, taking care of yourself. Just like they were such a wealth of information. And then what happened was my water broke, and it suddenly became a little more high risk. And
your water broke without going into labor,
without having contractions. So because labor contractions hadn't started, there's a risk of infection if you don't start having contractions at a certain point. And if I had tried to do the home birth, there's a possibility that something could have gone wrong, or they would have at a certain point needed to send me to the hospital, which means I had two backup plans. My primary backup plan would be to just go to the hospital. Luckily, we had a backup plan with hospital midwives who would deliver in the hospital. And so they wouldn't like let me in unless I went in within 24 hours of my water breaking, because they didn't want to deal with like a high risk pregnant like birth situation. They wanted that to go to an OBGYN. So they have, there's a lot of checks and balances here that I really appreciate in terms of what could go wrong. But anyway, so what happened was that we did end up going to the hospital, because we were like, well, we don't want to do it at home and then take the risk that it's going on too long
and end up in the ER
and end up in some random ER in like a very scary emergency situation. So we're like, let's go to the hospital, let's just like suck it up. So it was like a bummer. But anyway, what happens then is that the fee that midwives are normally able to take from the way our current healthcare system works is there luckily is like one safeguard that helps women who are thinking of hiring midwives, is that you the insurance companies do have to pay for a birth. And I think this is in most states, like they have to pay for that.
Yeah.
Like at least the bare minimum cost of a birth, which is, I think, like, I don't know, $10,000 or whatever. So they're in most states, midwives can find a way to get that fee. It just takes like a lot more paperwork. Yeah. But in this case, because they had been caring for us for all these months for free, basically, we then go to the hospital and the hospital takes that fee because they did the birth.
Yeah.
So it, the way the current system is set up is like it really burns midwives and like alternative healers and a lot of people like acupuncturists, people that like I think really help people a lot in terms of their health, because so much of like what was great about my pregnancy healthcare with my midwives and my doulas is just the information about like nutrition and ways I could be taking care of myself and taking care of my body and just like things that no OBGYN has ever taken more than like 5 seconds to answer a question. And to have people
say no OBGYN ever.
Well, in my experience, it's
sure.
just like
in your experience, yes.
I'm not trying to trash OBGYNs. I think they're, I'm sure a lot of them are great. I'm just saying in the New York City healthcare system, especially like the way you get rushed in and out of appointments, I literally, my OBGYN canceled on me like 4 times during pregnancy. He didn't show up to my appointment because he was like delivering another baby or whatever. And that was a doctor I only had for like a 3 or 4 months until I found my midwives.
Yeah.
That's like
your experience specifically is a great example of that. Just like, and then at least the way you painted a picture, whenever you did see this guy, you did not feel like it was somebody asking you how you're doing.
Well, I finally had one meeting with him where, again, he was like rushing in from a birth and he like looked around the office. I was the least pregnant person. And he was like, well, I have to admit her to our system so that she remains a patient here, but I have to give priority to these women who are much more pregnant than her, who have more issues to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of like shooed me in and out. And he was like, okay, I can only see you quickly. And it was just like, he did like a very quick exam, was like, there's really nothing for you to know right now. You just have to like keep being pregnant and chill out. And he was like, do you have any questions? And I was like, well, I don't know. Is there something I shouldn't eat? Like, I was like, you know, like, tell me something about my body, what's happening right now. And
well, step one, keep being pregnant.
So all he said, he just goes, don't eat too much fish. And then that was the end of the whole, like, that was the whole thing.
That was the only advice he gave you.
In 5 visits to my OBGYN's office, that was the one bit of advice I had was given.
I remember going to that office with you, but I didn't go back with you, did I?
I don't think you ever went there. I don't know.
I went there once.
Under his care, I was able to get like referred to a hospital for sonograms and stuff, but he wasn't really involved in any of that. Like, so I feel like you came to those visits maybe.
Yeah. When once we hooked up with the midwives, then I was like involved and learned a lot, so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we've talked about this before, but the other crazy thing about the midwives is like they would talk us through like our relationship as parents. Like there was like an emotional component too, which is like just incredibly valuable. And like no one is giving that to people when they're about to like have the most fragile human like enter their lives. You know what I mean? Like
the most fragile human. You're about to admit the most fragile human to your family.
No, it's just like, it's a terrifying experience for people. And our culture is just like, you'll figure it out.
Yeah. And of course, like, I'm sure so many of you people listening right now, of course, have your own stories. And I'm sure you've done every version of it that's been really great, really terrible. And I'm sure there's terrible midwives and really wonderful OBGYNs. Write in. Tell us your experience, because I feel like it's not a thing you hear. Like, there's so many parenting things where I had heard none of this. Maybe this is because I'm a man and of a certain age. Like, none of my friends had given babies. But this feels like a given baby. What did I say?
I don't know.
None of my friends had given babies.
Yeah.
Had had them at that point. So it feels like a sort of a hidden part of our society.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to demonize OBGYNs who provide a lot of valuable healthcare to women, but It's just like any other feminist issue. It's not about any women having, like, all women having to do the same thing or one thing being the right choice. It's just about us having options.
Yeah.
And that doesn't even just apply to women's issues. It's just our healthcare system in this country doesn't give us access to a lot of healthy resources mm-hmm. that could actually help us.
Well, there's plenty of statistics to back up the fact that this country over medicates a lot of mothers by treating a pregnancy as a medical condition first.
Well, there's also just a full lack of interest because I was just reading some statistic about endometriosis or something where it's never studied at all compared to things like erectile dysfunction, but it's like a very painful chronic disease that women suffer from. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was some evidence that supported that Viagra would help ease like endometriosis cramping or something, like it would help ease the pain. Uh-huh. And it was put forth before a panel of like five men for like approval for study or something by the FDA. And they like didn't deem it of like public use or something. They used some sort of like heady term to be like, this doesn't seem of interest to the public. Like,
I can't relate to this at all.
That's like, that what does kind this of have stuff to do is with just my happening penis? All the time. Like, just being like, no, 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 we need more penis drugs.
That's interesting, but no. Next on the agenda, more penis drugs. Oh, here, here is my penis. Should I keep doing this penis doctor character?
What's his MO? He's just
doesn't understand what you're talking about until it's about penises.
Pro penis. The way you play him, it feels like he doesn't even know what a penis is. He just heard other people talking about it.
Oh, I know what a penis is. That's why I talk about it so much, because I definitely have one and I definitely know how it works. And I'm not at all lying.
Okay, well, sir, we need to study some women's bodies over here.
What are you talking about? What?
Women's bodies?
Who's that?
Your dad got you this job, didn't he?
Oh, penises. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, penis, penis.
Okay, all right. Moving on. This next segment is called Listeners Want to Knows. It's where we take some questions or comments from our listeners.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Listeners Want to Knows. Yeah, 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 yeah. Listeners Want to Knows. Should we try theme songs?
Wow, I didn't realize we had that theme song for this, but
you know how
I'm
much
excited.
That cost? $5,000.
Oh my God. Well, it was worth it.
It was a really good joke I just made. Okay.
That was way more than I thought you were going to say, but it was worth it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, this comes to us from Allison, who's written to us before. Hi, Peter and Beth. You guys are always talking about how lucky you feel that Bryn's best friend's parents are awesome. Ever heard of the term sanctimommy? Wikipedia says it is a portmanteau. That's when you take two words and put them together.
Yes.
Of two words, sanctimonious and mommy. The word is a colloquialism used to refer to a person, usually a female, who has very opinionated views on child rearing and presents them up front without any sense of humility. Anyway, I feel like I've come across many of these types of parents since having my daughter, and it makes me not want to venture out into the world of other parents because I just don't really have the time/energy to battle judgment. Where I live, many moms, women, seem to make being a Pinterest stay-at-home mom their life goal, which I don't relate to, but it's totally fine if it works for them. And then moving back home to LA, where this is a whole other level of judgment and shaming, I find myself not really wanting to branch out and be social with mom groups in the area. I usually get a sense of weird competition over stages of development and things like which kid has the most organic, gluten-free, fat-free, sugar-free diet. Don't get me wrong. I like to stay healthy for the most part, but I believe in staying sane. But I feel like if I utter frozen dino buddies, which I think are delicious, by the way, I get those judgy looks. Like, how dare I poison my child? Part of me is like, whatever, man. But the other part of me doesn't want to fully take that attitude for the sake of my daughter. And yes, I'm fully aware how completely neurotic I sound. My question, is any of this stuff present where you guys live? If so, how do you navigate through this? I know you have your Facebook mom group, Beth, but do you physically see any of these people and set up play dates and stuff? Keep up the great work. Thanks a million. Kim, compliments. Thank you, Allison.
So I haven't experienced this much in person around here, but that I also have to contextualize that, which with the fact that I never go out and meet moms or take our kids anywhere.
Oh yeah, we don't talk to people.
We don't. We know like three people, and we say hi to them in the halls of our building and go about our business. But the people we know are nice. I'll say I do experience this more online, and mm-hmm. usually it's more subtle. Like, I don't know. I have to say I don't experience this that much in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
The thing I experience much more than this is the total opposite, which is like well-intentioned women, or like, I guess, like sort of anxious women who assume that you're doing that, or they're like scared of being judged. So they constantly like apologize for their kids. Like, I've definitely found myself doing this where you're just like, but like sometimes I think women, it's hard to like mm-hmm. just talk honestly about your kids without like unintentionally triggering that emotion in someone.
Yeah.
Because like,
so they're expecting you to judge them.
Yeah. Because like
it even happens.
Cause I think like by average standards, like I think we're not like, I would not think someone would expect us to be like high and mighty about our kids in any way, because like we do feed them garbage dino bites or whatever she said. Like we
have a podcast where we talk about how we're shitty at things.
Yeah. And I sort of like, I think that's like also like a good way to disarm it, which maybe is why I've like avoided more of this. But like, I do try to like off the bat just be like, oh, we don't know what we're doing. Like I don't know. I'm like, cause when I meet moms around here, I'm like, the way I talk to them, just like, I don't know. Do you like take your kids places? What are you doing? How do you do this?
Give them a life?
But then sometimes what I'm talking about with these women getting like unintentionally triggered into thinking I'm comparing is I think they take my like casual interest in a topic as if like I'm very concerned for my kids' like involvement in those things.
So they overvalidate you?
Well, no. Then they're like, oh, I don't know. I never thought about that. We haven't even thought about, I guess we need, like, and it's just like, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make this seem like something we all have to care about. I like just making conversation, you know?
There is definitely a gender divide on this. And I think men, like, the joke and the stereotype is that we're the ones being like, well, I don't know. And so we have the luxury of sort of embracing the trope that we're not supposed to know. And I so think, so we, not everybody, but I definitely fall into this, like, that like, oh, well, me not knowing and me being a little naive about things is charming. And I don't feel judged, and that's my privilege.
I'm trying to like cultivate that more with women and just be more like, hey, isn't it funny how we're all a mess? Like, I don't know. I don't always want to go too hard into that, because then like it, everything with women swings like a pendulum, like wildly into like some sort of judgment zone.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you don't want to be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You don't want to make anyone feel like they have to be any kind of way, because it's been so drilled into our heads to be like constantly trying to keep up with the other women around us.
Yeah. And I can feel it on because obviously if you guys are listening to this podcast, you know, our big thing is there's no right way and you do you. But there is that, like, I don't want to be the person that's like, it doesn't matter. I don't care. Obviously, I do. It matters a lot. But it's how tightly do you hold on to what?
I think it's picking the battles of what actually does matter. And the thing is, you know, I think we grew up with sort of grounded parents. And so we know at the end of the day, we ate a lot of crappy food. We watched a lot of crappy TV. But it was balanced out with other quality things.
Love and education.
Yeah. And it worked out. Like, so we know, like, those are not necessarily the battles we need to pick. Like, I was talking to someone about this because they felt bad because they missed their daughter's, like, dress up week at school. Did I already talk about this?
But I don't know.
It was like their school was having some, it was a preschool, it was having some sort of themed week about, like, every day was a different theme and the kid was supposed to dress up, which is just a parenting nightmare. Like, why give me five tasks, like five elaborate tasks? So I'm sure it was simple enough, whatever. It doesn't matter. But like, this person obviously felt guilty because they're like, I've sent my daughter to school like wearing none of these things. I had no idea. Like, and I know that feeling. And like, I don't know. I'm just like trying to learn not to beat myself up for stuff like that. Cause like when I missed the Dos Caminos thing, I was like, it's, you start like revving yourself up like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to feel guilty about this or bad. And then I was just, luckily that was one that didn't really strike a nerve with me, but there's other.
I was wondering about that with you because my fear when you told me you couldn't come is that you were getting ready to be defensive about me judging you for skipping it, which did not happen. I didn't care. And that didn't happen. But that was my first thought, is that I feel like you probably put more pressure on yourself.
No. Well, the only thing that was stressing me out was the idea that I would book a meeting with someone, like taking time out of their trip to New York, and then you would get an audition and then try to pressure me to do, go to the Dos Caminos.
I was also very aware of that. But it worked out great. But yeah, I think it's a great example of like, we stressed enough. We didn't overstress about that. Because like, this is important and it was fine.
Yeah. But I think there are certain, like, I'm struggling to come up with examples off the top of my head, but there's certain things that would probably trigger either one of us for various reasons that are not that important.
Yeah. So I think we're pretty lucky how much we don't run into that. But part of that is how not social we are.
Yeah. And that we don't, I don't know, walk always amongst a certain class of people.
I mean, also, most of our close friends, again, are younger than us or artists and have babies later. So we're the leaders. We're the standard of parenting. So sorry, everyone.
Yeah. People look to us as an example of fucking up and feeling okay about it.
Yeah, owning these kids that we unintentionally had. All right, I got one more quick email. You ready for this? This is a short one. This is a quick to the point question. Hello, Beth and Peter. Love your podcast. I do have a question, though. Have you thought about raising your kids vegetarian / vegan? I am a vegetarian, aspiring vegan, and I was wondering how you feel about the whole ordeal. Also, how would you feel if Bryn or Maven decided to go vegetarian vegan? I've heard some people doing it as young as 7 or 10. Would you let them do that and go the extra effort cooking meat-free meals? Adios, Imke. Imke? Imke. I-M-K-E. Cool name.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm sort of open to the idea of being vegetarian, but like I think I would cook for my kids and provide vegetarian options if I had to. I mean, obviously that's like kind of coming from a place of privilege where I feel like I could just buy a block of tofu and like throw it at them.
Yeah.
If I was on a stricter income, I would think I would be more frustrated by this quirk of my child.
Uh-huh.
But it's fine. I do think, like, I've heard stories from people who are vegetarian for many, many years, is that, like, at a certain point, I feel like you do kind of need, you need, like, a blood meal. I feel like, like, some people, I think especially women, like, their health can get really bad. And I think sometimes, I'm not saying you need to eat meat, like, every meal of the day or whatever, but I do think once in a while, like, sprinkling it in is better for your health.
There's a way to do it. I know very successful vegetarians, but it takes a lot of figuring out.
I guess I just mean, like, for the average person, like, who is sort of grabbing a meal here and there, like, it just starts to deplete some of, like, the nutrients in your body. I'm not saying it can't be done. Obviously, you can survive on vegetarian diet.
And you can thrive.
But I've actually been thinking about this more lately because, as you know, I've become more sensitive to foods and things. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I did sort of like a half-assed Whole30 for like 7 days. And then I kind of did it again because I was trying to figure out some food allergies. And I realized like I don't want to eat that strictly all the time, but I do think my body starts to feel like shit pretty quickly if I'm not putting like real food in my body, like, you know, fruits and vegetables and things that clearly grew from something.
Yeah.
So I do, I want to lean more into that. I think I might try to lean more pescatarian though.
Yeah. Well, my view on it is, don't want to put in the effort. I don't judge anyone for any choices they make about food. It's a very selfish view of that. Like, I know there's great moral reasons to do it. I know there's good healthy reasons, but I'm not interested.
But one of the things I learned from doing the Whole 30 thing is like the idea that it's more of an effort is a little bit of an illusion. Like, it does take technically more effort because it's a change from what you've been doing.
The transition is an effort.
The transition is an effort. But like the batch cooking things and like throwing some olive oil on a vegetable and throwing it in the oven is not like, it's not even more work than ordering delivery. You know what I mean? By the time you like put all the foods into the Seamless or whatever, like, it's actually not more work.
You're the trying to accommodate your food specific issues.
Yeah.
I learned more about practical cooking and like getting a healthy dinner together from just thinking about you.
Yeah.
Because when it's me, I'm like, I don't value my body the way I should, and my blood pressure says so. But knowing that you had to come home, like, I've been enjoying it, and I realize it's not that hard. You just need to like dig in for a little while to figure out some basic stuff. So I know we could do it. I'm not going to. If Brendan Maven were like, I feel very strongly about this, I'm going to do it, I would do it. And I'd figure out how to be a vegetarian cook. And that's the only time I think that I could possibly become a vegetarian, is because I'd have to do it for other people, and it would be easier just to eat what they're eating.
I mean, part of what stresses me out about it is just like, as you know, in the past, I have fainted many times. And
I don't know why I laughed at that.
If I don't get enough protein, it's like, it becomes a problem. And it's just really hard to get protein when you're like vegetarian, like to get the right combination. Plus I have food allergies, et cetera. It's just like a complicated thing when you're on the go trying to get food in your body to not like pass out in the streets.
Yeah.
That's my anxiety around it.
I just love chicken. Oh. You want to go eat some ice cream?
Yeah.
All right, show's over. Let's do it. This has been another episode of We Knows Parenting. Oh, gosh, if you want to reach out and talk to us, weknowspod@gmail.com is the email that you can use. You can also go to weknowsparenting.com to buy some merch. To also get the information about our live show happening in Brooklyn, New York on Tuesday, April 23rd. Chuck Bryan of Stuff You Should Know will be there. Abby Crutchfield, Ophira Eisenberg will be there. Incredible special guest. Buy your tickets now. Come see us. We'll hang out afterwards and say hello.
Yeah,
and,
go to littlefieldnyc.com.
Guys, we don't get to hang out with people. Come hang out with us.
Grab those tickets.
Where can we find us on the social medias, Beth?
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at We Knows Pod, or the We Knows Parenting page. And you can check us out on iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe. That would really help us out.
Yeah, and we'll, as Bryn would say, we'll see you next time. Baby!
Baby!